Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
It all starts with a why. What's your why?
So I see it in a way where I like to challenge myself. I always like a challenge. And for me, you can only explore if you make yourself vulnerable, if you keep going at it over and over again.
Because growth mindset can be different for a lot of people. How do you see growth mindset?
Consistency for me is equals perfection. Like the more you do it, the more I think that little 1% is going to make a difference. And what do I mean about that 1%? For me, that's what growth mindset is.
It's not the outside situations that will stop you. It's your internal thing saying that, okay, I'm done. It's time to stop.
The first 30 days and whatever you'd be doing would be more of a habit. Mm-hmm. And then you go between 60 to 90 days so you can change it into a lifestyle.
If you had a time machine and you could go back in time and give yourself a piece of advice or maybe two, what would that be?
Trust the process. Mm-hmm. I'd say trust the process and keep going.
You tried to do something 1 million times and it didn't work. It's not going to stop you from doing it again. It's not going to stop you from taking that action. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Shift with CJ podcast. Today we have an amazing guest. He's going to blow your mind. Marwan Albana is a beast when it comes to athletics. This guy has done so many crazy things. He's competed in Muay Thai, in boxing. He smashed 2 full marathons, 5 half marathons, 3 sprint triathlons, 10 Olympic triathlons, and so on. So impressive, right? But wait, there's more. Marwan is more than an athlete. He is a certified expert in fitness. He's got so many certifications. He also has a podcast, and his crazy work ethic and passion and dedication for all these kind of sports and fitness is really infectious. When I was recording the podcast with him, I was so full of energy, and I would like you to get inspiration. Get comfortable, because this podcast is going to be packed with a lot of inspiration as well as practical tips. Let's jump right in. Let's welcome Marwan Albana. Marwan, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to have you. I've had so many questions ever since I went to your profile and I saw all the amazing things that you're doing, just like we said in the introduction. Now, you've done triathlon, marathons, half marathons, Muay Thai fights.
Yeah.
Were you always like this? Like, did you have a bad breakup and then you went into fitness? Like, what's your backstory? How do you get into fitness and like competing?
Yeah, I think ever since I was like at a young age, I always had that like competitive little spirit within me.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously where other people would call it like being a little bit extreme, I just find that little bit of an adrenaline rush getting through the finish line or competing against myself or wanting to get one personal best, like a PB after another. And then it's kind of grew up with me, you know, like ever since a young age, I was playing like football and then mm-hmm. played for my local team up to the national team and then all the way to university's team on a scholarship and then changed sports, like you said. Gone into combat sports, and after that, the final sport is triathlon, and that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah, so right now, triathlon is your main focus. Growing up, did you see a pattern? Because a lot of the times, a lot of people who have that kind of a determination and who are going after things and wanting to achieve something, they have something in their genetics that makes them, you know, go after and chase after a few things and get that dopamine rush. Did you notice your family have, or like in your family tree, anyone being into sports or anyone being at those extremes that you inherited those qualities from?
From the extreme parts, I'm not sure anyone within mm-hmm. my family does it. Do I have an active family? I'd like to say so, yes. Mm-hmm. Did that extreme little bit grew within me? I think so, yeah, because nobody would pretty much do like long or long endurance competitions like I do. So I think I kind of maybe started it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So that means like you had the right family support or you had the right environment in which your internal skills could flourish or your internal kind of like going out there and getting to the finish line or competing like it flourished. So that's good, because a lot of people don't have that these days. A lot of the parents are always busy with their work, and you know, most of the times movement has been neglected, especially in countries where temperatures can be of the extreme, considering UAE and some other places as well.
Yeah.
What did your friends think about you always competing? Did they ever tell you like, hey, relax?
You know what? I've had some friends that'll be like, yeah, you're doing a little bit too much. And I've got a couple of friends, maybe two or three, which for me makes like all of a difference. If someone comes to me and says, hey, bro, you know, you actually motivated me to move today. And for me, when I see like that, for me, that is like the greatest message I can ever like read, you know what I mean? Or someone's ever told me, like, if I can make a difference for one guy, I've done my job. You know, I'm out there like on Instagram, basically like promoting, yeah, you got to just go ahead and do it. You got to kind of have like a stoic mindset and just keep going at it. And consistency will bring success at the end of the day and everything that we do at the end of the day. But yeah, I think my friends, some of them are like, in the beginning, they were like, oh, you're crazy. Like, what are you doing? And and now they're like, oh, you've actually motivated me to do something. So I'm like, great.
That's amazing. You're motivating all of us, especially if you guys go to his Instagram. Highly motivating. Your podcast as well. You interview people. It's very inspiring because you're sharing this kind of a knowledge. Now, it all starts with a why. Okay. What's your why? Why do you torture yourself, get through all of these things? I know it's not torture for you, but going through, you know, waking up early mornings, doing all these runs, cycling, swimming, all of that stuff. What's your why?
So I see it in a way where I like to challenge myself. I always like a challenge. And for me, my why is pretty strong enough to at the same time call it a growth mindset, because I really do think like we've got something within us that you can only explore if you make yourself vulnerable, if you keep going at it over and over again, and try and find that spot where you have like doubts in your head that you're trying to push through, where your mind is actually trying to be stronger than your body, and then your body will follow later. Because I've been in so many situations where I really wanted to go ahead and do it, but my actual body just shut down. Couldn't do it at all. But it's just about going there and doing it again. Even in some competitions, like when I did my full distance triathlon, right? It was my first time doing a marathon as well within it. So that consisted of 3.8 kilometers swim, 180 kilometers bike, and then 42.2 kilometers run, which is a marathon in the end. And I was like 30 kilometers in, I was literally like falling asleep. You know, it was my first marathon, falling asleep, getting off course. I was falling asleep, like getting off course 3 minutes out of the course. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like I got to go in this way. So I kept on running and then I couldn't go faster. And then my whole body just spazzed out. So that was a real dig within me. Like I had to really find myself and tell myself, yeah, I can do it. So for me, I'm always trying to explore how much my body can take. But doing it safely, of course, having a background in personal training myself, I know what are my limits and what I should and can't be doing. So, yeah, I think that's my why, you know, a little bit of finding that growth mindset and improving on it. Because when you're in the vulnerable side and you're just out there, you can only learn from it. And that's my whole experience. I just want to keep learning and learning and learning.
I see that, of course, you and me, we are both wearing white, but you have this white belt mentality that we refer to in martial arts, which is the mentality of a lifelong learner. Now, when you talk about your why, what I see is there is a theory called the self-determination theory, which basically just entitles that us humans, we're mostly intrinsically motivated. If you're thinking that, hey, I want to prove to myself that I can do it and, you know, I can win that race or I can get to the finish line, that is something which is motivating you internally versus an extrinsic motivation, which is like, I want to win the gold medal or I want to get some money out of these races. But humans, we're looking for, if you wanted to get this thing, which I see a lot in you, is that we have three things, okay? One thing is relatedness. So how can we relate to others? Very big driver. Most human actions are based on that. One is autonomy, which is something that I see in you quite a lot. and competence. So autonomy, competence, and self-relatedness. And your story completely shows us that how taking control of your life, autonomy, and improving yourself, like competence, it translates into success. And I like what you spoke about growth mindset. I think the lead researcher of this is Carolyn Dweck. And she...
That's it, yeah.
Exactly. She talks about the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset.
Exactly.
And we know that growth mindset for academic purposes or sports purposes, it is one of the leading things that differentiates people. In your life, what do you see? Because growth mindset can be different for a lot of people. How do you see growth mindset?
I think the way I see a growth mindset is in a way where, so you got a barrier where you're comfortable, right? That's the way I see it. I see it in a couple of circles. So you've got the first circle, which is the comfort zone, right? And then the second circle, which is the fear zone, right? And after the fear zone, you have the vulnerable zone. And then the last zone comes into the growth. So whatever I'm doing or whatever I put my head into from like being uncomfortable, it's almost the same as like a circle that everybody goes into. And that circle is going to be like from a pre-contemplation mode up into a contemplation mode, up into action. And then the hardest bit is maintenance. I think the hardest thing from that growth mindset is maintenance. So for me, it's all about consistency, right? Consistency for me is equals perfection. Like the more you do it, the more I think that little 1% is going to make a difference. And what do I mean about that 1%? For me, that's what growth mindset is. For me is that, say, for example, in my fighting days, when I was getting ready for a fight in the training camp, I would force myself to wake up at like 4 a.m. in the morning because I know my opponent's probably not going to be doing that. I would force myself to go out there at like 9, 10 p.m. because I know my opponent is not going to be running at 9, 10 p.m., probably going to be in bed while I'm the one that's hustling. So that in itself, if I take those two reasons into the ring with me and where it's like almost a mental battle and in a way where it goes, you go, I go, and then the last man stands as the one who has the most determination to winning or how bad does a person want to win? And for me, that's what it is. That's what growth mindset is. You get to that point up until where you know that you're doing that little bit of extra more than anyone else, and then you definitely grow from it. So that's kind of how I see it in that way.
I also see that you have this personality. We don't know each other for long, but from the way you're speaking and the way you're describing things, I think that you are also a person with a lot of grit. Have you heard about grit before?
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, waking up early, being consistent, and I would say like even adding perseverance to it, because a lot of people, they start becoming consistent and then something goes away. They've either have a loss or, you know, they get injured or, you know, someone tells them something and that plays with their mental ability to go and perform the next day. So I think consistency and perseverance to do that, you have a lot of that grit in you. Did you learn this from someone? Were you naturally like this? Because I'm sure once you go after something, unless you're like kind of done, you don't stop it. Like you have to, it's not the outside situations that will stop you. It's your internal thing saying that, okay, I'm done. It's time to stop.
That's right. So I've taken it from a rule a long time ago where it was like the first 30 days and whatever you'd be doing would be more of a habit. And then you go between 60 to 90 days so you can change it into a lifestyle. And for me, that pretty much was the reason enough for me to continue on whatever sports I'd do that to keep that consistency going. After the 30 days, you're like, okay, this isn't actually that bad considering the first week, you know? And then 90 days just happens. And if there was that one single day where, for example, just like any athlete would be either sick or something happens, you know, or anything like that, personal reasons, you feel like something's missing. So at that point, it's already changed into a lifestyle. So you kind of build that within you. And for me, anything that I do, if I was to keep on going or keep at a sport, say, for example, triathlon, for me, it's just a lifestyle. It's just a healthy lifestyle for me. And that's a good enough reason for me to keep getting up in the morning, just dip myself in cold waters, whether it's in a swimming pool or train late at night in Ramadan, finishing off at like midnight. For me, it's just, you know, it's a part of my lifestyle that I feel like I can balance my personal life on my physical activity side at the same time. So, yeah.
There is this author, his name is Hal Elrod, and he wrote a book called The Miracle Morning. And in The Miracle Morning, he explains three phases of something similar to what you're saying. Phase one, he says, is uncomfortable. So you start a new habit, whether it's waking up early in the morning, you know, the first phase is unbearable. So you're like, oh my God, I cannot wake up early in the morning. You're waking up over a few times. And then you transition into the second phase that becomes uncomfortable. Now it's bearable, but it's just uncomfortable. And then what you're saying is like, if you get to that 60-day or the 90-day mark, then it becomes unstoppable. That is when that integration happened. And I love that you said that you kind of like brought this into your life as a lifestyle, because what I see with top athletes and top performers is that they want to segregate all of their different, you know, from sports to business to their personal life to all of these things. But what is the magic is when you integrate rather than segregate. So when you make it a lifestyle, when it doesn't become a chore for you, it doesn't put you under pressure, it's just that something that you're loving doing anyway. And even if you're not doing it because of a reason, you're just doing it because in your case gives you more life satisfaction, makes you more happy. That's you true. Think this is how life should be. Okay, so you've done so many different sports. Tell us one moment in your sport that did not go as you expected, and what did you learn from it? I'm sure there are multiple, and if there are some exciting stories, share with us.
That's actually a really good question. I think after the football side of things, where I've had an injury, right? And that injury was that I tore all of my ligaments, and that stopped me from continuing football. So I tore my ACL, LCL, and MCL as well at the same time. And that got me in a, let's say, a really bad place, because for the next year, which I didn't want to do surgery because I had age on my side as well. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to be doing physio. And I think I stopped that physio due to the fact that, you know, I'm just unmotivated. I just got into a little bit of a bad eating lifestyle, unhealthy lifestyle, let's just call it that. And then based on that, I changed sports. Now, I like a challenge, like I said. I think I went a little bit too extreme when I picked the combat sports, because after I've gone over the injury, I got to a single, basically some sports that is mostly revolved around having injuries, which is boxing and Muay Thai as well, since it's the art of eight limbs. And yeah, I think maybe that wasn't the best choice of sports, but it did teach me so much, especially like self-discipline. With Muay Thai, now, could I have chosen something else? Probably, but at that stage in my life, I don't regret doing it because that's what I needed, maybe. And with Muay Thai, for example, what a lot of people, I think they don't, you know, don't maybe see or try and avoid seeing is that the amount of injuries that comes with it as well. So if you're, unless you're doing it as like a lifestyle, unless it's your career option, I don't personally think you can balance both between having it as a hobby and then doing something else on the side, because it will come with a lot of things. And I've had plenty of injuries with combat sports. I'm talking about like three times broken my nose, some fingers as well, some shin fractures, some foot fractures as well. And the list keeps going on and on and on again. So I think sometimes, yes, being a little bit extreme or having that mentality is good, but at the same time, I started developing in a way where you'd have a little bit more love for yourself to kind of just sit back and understand that, you know what, everything happens for a reason, and I am where I am today because of that reason. And I believe, inshallah, that more and good things will come in the future. Yeah, and then that's what happened.
Where did you train Muay Thai? In Dubai or?
So in Dubai and in UK. So in Dubai, I trained Muay Thai with Jason Witham in Muay Thai Muppets. In UK, I've trained with a couple of legends, I'd say, in the fitness industry, like Steve Kerridge from Essex Kickboxing Academy and Sean from Silver Spirits, and shout out to Bradley Goldberg from Benfleet Essex Muay Thai.
Shout out to all of those guys.
Yeah.
Amazing. Muay Thai is interesting. When I was young, we're talking about 2011, 2012. At that time, UFC was like coming up quite a lot. And I was like, oh man, I was pretty athletic. So, and I was fascinated by this whole grit mindset and, you know, all of these things. So I went to Thailand and trained in a couple of times and trained in many camps. And I remember the first day I was there, because I did martial arts growing up as a kid here in Dubai. This guy put me into like the, so there's a beginner's class and there's not so beginners. And then there's advanced. So there is this thing, which is not, no one knows what to call them, because it's not beginners. It's not advanced, somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And I remember this Thai trainer comes up to me. He's like, oh, how long are you here for? I'm like, oh, about 2 months. He's like, oh, perfect, cool. And then he punches me like right in the face. And he's like, oh, your training starts. In a very funny way. And everyone's laughing. And I'm like, what the hell?
Welcome to Muay Thai kind
exactly.
of thing.
Like, I didn't even start the class. I mean, it was like half the class was done. He's like, now the class started. You need to go through something if you're going to be here for 2 months.
That's true. That's true.
And that's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because for me, I was like, okay, I want to have it as a hobby. I want to develop the skills. But you're exactly right. Even the first day, they got me injured.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's what it is with Muay Thai. If you see someone like who's into it, and you're in Thailand, mm-hmm. and you've been there for like 2 months. So for them, they think it in a way, the Thais, where if you're there for a month, you're good enough to go and have a fight. They put that trust in you because they know that you've been training under their wings for like at least a month. So for them, they're like, I see that point of view, because especially in those combat sports, and that's what I'm saying, you really have to like get hurt and fall down so you can learn from it. That's the only way. Unfortunately, that's the only way.
That's the only way. Yeah.
That's the only way you can learn to protect yourself. And next time, you know what to do and what not to do, or how to deal with a certain opponent situation that's in front of you. So yeah, I understand that.
How do you manage sports, and in your case, a lot of sports, and your personal life?
So I start early morning, mm-hmm. and I sleep early at night as well. So by 9, that's bedtime for me. By like 3:30, I'm awake. Mm-hmm. And that's how I take advantage. So I wake up at 3:30, make sure I'm in training at like 4:15. I go up from 4:15 or 5, let's say, all the way up until like 8. And that's a good 3 hours. If I have a double session, then I'll do it before work and after work. And that'll be sometimes a late session. Or sometimes I'll squeeze both sessions before work. So yeah, it's just about early bird catches the worm kind of thing.
Okay. So you're sleeping from 9 to 3:30.
Yeah.
If you talk to a biohacker like me, or like some functional medicine expert, they'll tell you that's probably not enough. Have you thought about that before?
Yes. I know that for me and my, I think for me personally, 6.5 hours isn't that great if I have a high intensity training session that I'm going to do, or a long interval, mm-hmm. right? If I know that I have a high intensity, based on my coach, by the way, shout out to Coach Joao as well. He kind of has this understanding of me. If he's going to put like really hard session, he does it on the weekends. So on the weekends, I have a little bit more of an opportunity to sleep and get my 7.5 solid hours of sleep. And I think for me, that's what I need, mm-hmm. right? If it was 6.5 hours and I'm in that sleeping pattern and I have double sessions, yes, it's not enough. I have to find a way where I'd get like a 20 to 30 minute power nap. Mm-hmm. And based on that, then I'm ready to go for the rest of the day, basically. So yeah, that's a really important point that you touched on. Mm-hmm. Sleep is the most important thing towards recovery and sports performance as well.
Tell us, what do you do, because you understand the importance of sleep? And I always tell people, sleep is the pillar on top of which all other health pillars are placed. So it's the foundation that you should be having. Unfortunately, a lot of people in the world now, it's, you know, because of podcasting and a lot of YouTube videos, things are changing because there are so many experts like yourself and, you know, sharing what you do. So that makes me curious. What do you do for your sleep?
What do I do for my sleep?
Yeah, how do you optimize your sleep?
How do I optimize my sleep? Right. So I make sure I have my dinner, if that's what you mean, like around 6, I make it a little bit early. So I make sure I don't eat 2 hours before my sleeping time. An hour to an hour and 15 minutes before my sleeping time, I make sure that I take all of those Blu-rays out of my sight. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to be in a room, if I'm in a room, I got to make sure that that room has to be really low dimmed room. Okay. So I make sure it doesn't keep me awake in that aspect. I think in around an hour before my sleep, I try and avoid using my phone at all times. Saying that is one thing, but I think following it is another thing, because sometimes things happen and I have to answer it. But in my head, that's the main goal. That's how to optimize the perfect kind of sleep. And then once you wake up, you got a training session in front of me. Like if I've got a training session and I know it's going to be a hard one, I have to check how was my sleep. So I got like Garmin and sometimes I got my Whoop. So I analyze all of it from like the body battery to the HRV status to how long my REM, non-REM, and my deep sleep is and my light sleep. And if I was awake during the night and my sleep quality. If I see that, for me personally, myself, if I see that I've got more than an hour and 50 minutes of deep sleep, I know I'm good to go. Even if in the other aspects, like light sleep and non-REM sleep is not that good. But I know minimum 1 hour and 50 is good enough for me to go to like mid to high interval sessions. That's okay. Anything below that, I have to pace myself in those training sessions. Even if they're asking me to go high, I'm not going to go, say, for example, 100% of my FTP, which is functional threshold. But instead, I'm going to go and try and meet between 75 to 85% of that at a maximum, you know. Mm-hmm. And based on that, yeah, I think that's how I...
What about supplements?
Supplements, you see, I only really use it if I absolutely need to. I try and avoid using supplements, but I'd use herbs instead, like different kinds of teas.
What kind of teas?
So for me, what works for me is avoiding anything that's got to do with green or black tea.
Because of the caffeine and you cannot sleep at night, okay.
Exactly. So I'd go maybe for peppermint. I think peppermint, I'd have that. I'd put in the background, actually sometimes, it's a little secret, I put in the background some frequency waves to help, like those frequency waves.
Binaural beats?
Yeah, basically what you'd just open up on YouTube and write, you know, sleep wave frequencies or something like that, and I get that. Or for example, rainfalls actually seems to work for me. Anything like that, an hour before sleep or 45 minutes before sleep, I think it works a nice touch, I think.
That's good.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you for sharing that. And I love the fact that, you know, you're tracking it. In biohacking, we have a term saying that if you want to hack it, you have to track it. And 1 hour and 50 minutes of deep sleep is a very good number.
Yeah.
And this is because you're already so optimized and you're doing all the things right and you're actually moving your body enough. Because what we see is that most people, like, let's face it, 90% of us spend 90% of our times indoors. Most of us maybe go to the gym for an hour, but 90% of the time we're sitting down. And that's not in conjunction with human evolution, because we were out there doing things. And once you disturb that rhythm, that's why you see like obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular diseases, all of these things are on a rise. One thing is movement. And I think you're getting enough movement, so you're giving your body the right signal. And that's why I would argue that you don't even need supplementation, because your body is naturally going and asking for the rest. Now, you know, you mentioned sometimes, and you're looking at these, sometimes you have double training days and, you know, you're modulating that and taking informed decisions. That's amazing. I love it. When it comes to work, okay, a lot of the times people say, if I hit the gym too hard, then I'm not able to work properly because I'm so tired and, you know, I'm exhausted. How do you deal with that? Because one of the things that top performance athletes would have, the performance is their work. So they don't have a daytime job to go to. But you also have a daytime job to go to. You have different responsibilities, friends, family, all of that stuff. How do you kind of like, waking up is one. But are there times that you are training is making other areas of your life like go down?
If I see that it does, then I take it easy on like, because I track all of my trainings based on an app called Training Peaks. Mm-hmm. And I understand, like, for someone who's doing like maybe a full-time job, it's going to be different than someone who's a professional athlete. I think for someone who's gotten a full-time job, the most that they can touch per week of endurance training would be in around 11 to 15 hours mm-hmm. a week. Okay, so that's different from a professional athlete. I think a professional athlete would go in around, can reach from 22 all the way to 35 hours a week, which is completely way more than what it is. Now, doing that, so you got to go week by week, I think. And your training program has to be in a way where it's almost like a progressive overload. Mm-hmm. Based on that progressive overload, say I've got week one, right? When I'm week one, I'm 10 hours and a half in. I got to make sure that week two has to be between 10 hours and 45 to 11 hours. And with the same, almost same intensity, like 70 to 80%, the same intensity as the one last week. Now, if I see a huge jump, right, from 10 hours and 30, for example, and then I jump all the way to like 13 hours or 14 hours, I know for a fact that I'm going to be really, really tired mm-hmm. In that week. So I try and avoid doing that. That's where I got my coach as well, who understands it's really important to balance work life and also your hobby at the same time, or your physical activities. So based on that, you know, there's so many variables. I don't take it in a way where it's a week at the end of the day. I think I take it mostly in a way where how I feel during the day. Mm-hmm. And I just revolve my training schedule based on what I have throughout the day and how do I feel. If I've had good enough sleep, if I have a busy, hefty schedule throughout the day as well. And then based on that, I pace myself. So that's why I like to start it in early morning. Because I know if I've got that day planned, if I've got, you know, from my 9 to 5 or 9 to 6 job, if I've got a day which is a heavy day planned, I wouldn't go necessarily too hard on my early AM workouts. But at the same time, for me, I know that doing those training sessions are the reason why I have enough energy to go through my day, even if it was a hefty schedule, because mm-hmm. it's kind of changed into a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I would actually not be doing well in my 9 to 6 job if I keep sports aside, because I'd feel like I have all of this energy that turns into laziness. Mm-hmm. And then based on that, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not really performing, not even in my work, not even my physical activities. So I'm kind of like slacking off, and that's where you go down. But it's important to pace yourself based on the amount of hours of training that you got. Since endurance sport, I think, is different than like weightlifting. Endurance sports, it takes a lot of stress from your body. It takes a certain amount of fatigue out of your body. But I think like weightlifting, depending how much you obviously weightlifting, assuming we're going like between five, we're training, no competitions ahead of you, you're just doing a normal training plan between 50 to 60 or even 80% of your one rep max, for example. Mm-hmm. Based on that, so that's okay to do maybe before. Yes, it will give you more energy throughout the day. But if you start hitting numbers where you're like close to your one rep max, you're asking for too much stress within your body for it to do that training, which is considered a high intensity or hard training, hard effort training in the morning, and then doing your job. So you have to find that perfect balance. And bear in mind that it will not be perfect. You will have a lot of tests, trials, right? And where you have to figure out which one works for you. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you have it, keep it mm-hmm. and stay consistent with it. Because then little by little, you're going to start improving. And based on that, you find that pattern. Next thing you know, you're up to like 14 hours. When you're up in like 14 hours of training, everything's going good. Then you can start hitting those real numbers. And now we're talking, you know, mm-hmm. like, with top numbers that can get you good positions around there in tournaments nationally or even sometimes internationally based on what your goals are. Mm-hmm.
When you're competing, how much of it is physical and how much of it is mental?
When I'm competing, it's all mental for me. Because I know the physical part, I've already put it in the training aspect. So mentally for me, it's like, right, I just got to stick to that number that I have planned. So for triathlon, it's kind of a little bit different. Then let's say a sprint race. A sprint race, you know, you got to give it your absolute all. Everything's obviously is measured. Maybe if you're trying to go for like 12 seconds on 100 meters or whatever it is, mm-hmm. or maybe a minute and a half towards 400 meters or even less than that, that's can be timed. It's almost the same as like triathlon. Triathlon, you know that what you're going to be doing in competition day is going to be close to your threshold efforts, and your threshold efforts is going to be a certain number in your swim, it's going to be a certain number in your bike, it's going to be a certain number on your run. So no matter what distances you're covering anyway, it's all mental because it's hard and you got to keep up with that number. And that's the difficult bit, because you got to make sure that you're staying in zone four. Nobody wants to stay in zone four. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a difficult place to be in, and it's an uncomfortable place to be in. So for me, it's all about, right, let's keep on going. Let's keep on pushing. We're not stopping. We got this. You got this. It has to be a lot of like positive talk and like that mindset that you got to really dig into. Like some people dig into like a really dark place and or a stoic mind so they can just keep going no matter what distances they're doing or what kind of sports that they're doing. So that's kind of how I apply it.
So do you have at any point of time, you mentioned about the positive voices, but like, do you have any time in your head, any negative voices come?
Absolutely, all the time. It's all about overcoming it, because those negative thoughts are going to come at the end of the day. It's
just
about
you
fighting for everyone. I think everyone has that little thought that's like, if it's in competitions we're talking about, be like, oh no, I gotta slow down, I feel really uncomfortable. Oh, I got a stitch in my stomach based on taking too many gels, or I don't feel okay, I feel weak, I feel like I'm fatiguing. All of that is gonna hit you, and you gotta make sure you have two voices in your head, right? The negative voice in your head is gonna come, but you gotta cover it with that positive talk. You gotta dismiss it immediately. And that's kind of what it is, I think. Like that's closer to the stoic mindset, where you have to really think like, no, just shake it off. You got this. Keep going. You're like, oh, but you know, like, oh, I'm spazzing out. I can't push any harder. I'm just going to walk. No, we don't walk. We got to keep going. We got to keep pushing all the time. Let's go. We've trained too hard for this. You put so many hours into it. And then you start giving yourself reasons why you have to push hard. See, if you have a good enough reason where I think, right, you've woken up at 4 a.m. in the morning for the past month, that's a good enough reason for you to keep going. But if you're in that comfort stage where you're like, yeah, you know what, I'm going to work out after work, just keep it a little bit, light intensity because I feel tired and you're comfortable. Probably, I think 7 or 8 out of 10 times, you're probably going to have that negative voice in your head that's going to win, unfortunately. But if you give yourself enough reasons where you're grinding, you see a lot of top athletes in the world, by the way. Let's talk about Alexander Usyk, which is one of the greatest welterweight. Now, it was too easy for him. He went to heavyweight and he's like absolutely smashing everybody. He goes to his training camps, and this guy has been doing the same training camp ever since he was young. This guy doesn't have the comfort of his bed. He goes and lives in a farm. He sleeps on hay. You know, he puts himself through so much suffering in order for him to know that he's going out there and he's got all of this, like maybe anger inside of him that he can cool down or use whenever he wants. And that little voice in his head that will tell him, nope, I've suffered a lot and that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to just give it 100% because I've worked hard for this, you know. Obviously, if you're injured, then that's something different. That's also a difficult thing for you to do. If you've got an injury where you pulled a muscle or you twisted an ankle or you realize that something's seriously wrong, you got to stop. And that's the hard bit to do so as well, because then you got the ego coming in you. And you're like, oh, it's negative talk. No, it's actually sometimes not the negative talk. It's your positive talk and saying that, all right, it's not a race this race or it's not a competition this competition, but I'm not going to make it worse. And I'm going to save my efforts or not make it worse by making sure I can compete next time, which is also a tough thing to do. So, yeah.
You know, so many things were going through my mind while you were saying this. Delayed gratification, and where this whole concept of sports, like, hey, I'm going to suffer now. I'm going to work hard now. I'm not going to see the results immediately. But I am sure that putting in this kind of an effort will translate into some effort later. And then even as sports people, right, you have this opportunity cost, because you could be going to the movies, you could be, you know, having a nice cup of coffee later in the day, or you could be out with your friends or something, and you're sacrificing all of that for something that you cannot see right now, and you just hope that that comes. How do you stay strong in this belief or hope? How do you do it? Because, you know, if I was your friend, I mean, I would say that our personalities are very similar. I wake up early to train. I go to sleep. I have this very flexible mindset, but I know what is important to prioritize, and I 100% do that no matter what distractions come in. But how do you, in the world today, and you're, how old are you?
I'm 27.
27, so you're super young.
Yeah. Okay?
Our generation, I'm 32 now, but still at 34. Oh, time's passing really fast. Anyway, so in our generation, everything is about gratification. You look at Instagram, Facebook, whatever. We need results right now. That's the culture. How do you beat that culture? How do you say, let me just wake up for a month or two and then I hope I'll be stronger?
See, I think that's what differentiates different mentalities. I think you can't put that certain mentality to everybody out there.
Mm-hmm.
They can build it into a habit, but I think to start it, that's where you can't really teach anyone or convince anyone to come through. I think for me personally, I think I've always had that little bit of, you know what? Now I'm gonna do it because this is a challenge and I love a challenge, you know? And for me, that's what keeps me going, keep getting up until it turns into a lifestyle. So the hard bit is up until it turns into a lifestyle. Some people might take them 120 days. Some people might take them, you know, 8 months. Some people might not even ever find it and just give up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's that circle where action, maintenance, action, contemplation, maintenance. But for me, I think it's easier. I think you can't teach everybody to stay on that maintenance phase. That's the hardest bit. That's what differentiates different mentalities from one another. But you can definitely build it upon someone. But if it's already there, you've got that, you know, genetically, you're competitive. Genetically, you want to beat everybody in the race. You know, you want to go ahead and give that 100%. You want to be better than that person running next to you, even if it's the same pace. You know what I'm trying to say? So, yeah, I think it differentiates sometimes in that aspect, but it's still at the same time, it could be taught.
I like that you mentioned about genetics. And the one thing that I'm thinking about is a lot of people don't have this resilient mindset. Okay. You put them through something, they see failure. Okay. Game's over. Let's go back. Never going to do it again. That's what most people feel. But there is in neuroscience a concept called the resilience circuitry in the brain. And this involves three core components of the brain: the prefrontal cortex, which is your decision-making, executive performance, the ability to do something right now. The amygdala, that is your emotions, your fears, all of that stuff. And the hippocampus, your memory center of the brain. And how these three things interact can determine how resilient can you be right now. And most people who don't have this, and again, for some people, this is genetically hardwired. They are born with the natural resilient circuitry. So how their emotions and their memory and their decisions can play at the same time, but it's not going to influence something. So a bad loss in the past, you tried to do something 1 million times and it didn't work. It's not going to stop you from doing it again.
Yeah.
Not going to stop you from taking that action.
That's true.
So that's interesting what you brought about the genetics part, because so much of what we think, it's like, okay, this person is, worked really hard and this person has the right coach, but there are some things that you're born with, something that give you advantage over if you use it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are born with the right genetics, but they never use it.
Yeah.
And then hard work beats the talent.
Absolutely.
Tell us, we talk about the good sides. Tell us a dark side in sports.
A dark side in sports.
Yeah, dark side in sports. What do people not talk about? What could be some of the mental, emotional things that, you know? So for example, let's say I look at your Instagram and I look at this guy, he's running, he's boxing, he's cycling, he's swimming. What a cool guy, what a cool life. I would love to be like this guy. Oh, you know, he must be the favorite for everyone. Everyone loves him. And this is a general look at someone at your level who's been doing so many things. And people will always see the good side. One thing that people will say, oh, this guy is not lazy, he's working out quite a lot. But I'm sure behind the scenes, there is so much that goes into it. There's so much of, like, it's not all the bright things, but there are so many dark things as well that most people don't know about.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk to us about, like, at least one of those dark things that people look at and they don't see it.
Yeah.
it could be the hours that go in, the planning that goes in, the sacrifices that go in. I also call this the price of success.
Yeah.
So every successful person or everyone who's accelerated like yourself in sports or anything else, they've always had a price to pay. And that price is normally the dark side. Sometimes if you are aware of about this concept, you can at least tell yourself, hey, and tell your family, this is what I want to achieve. This is how I'm going to get there. This is the price that I have to pay. But most people, when they're not aware of this, they just think it's going to be, if Marwan can do it, I can do it. And they don't consider the price to pay. Then that's the time they get frustrated and they're like, oh my God, I never imagined this to happen.
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. You're absolutely right. There is, you know, there is a dark side that people don't really talk about or is something. And that's maybe most athletes' reasons on keeping them going, keeping them persistent, consistency comes from a dark place. So you got maybe, for me personally, the dark place that I have to go to, or for example, that it comes with this consistency and sacrifice that I have to go through, is sacrificing all of my social life, mm-hmm. everything that's got to do with anything that's got to do with fun. Mm-hmm. I try and revolve all of my fun around sports. And that's actually really interesting you said that, because triathlon for me was one of the sports where I could keep myself busy, because I wouldn't see myself as a full-time runner, wouldn't see myself as only a biker or a swimmer. I got three disciplines, and that's why I was really careful into picking triathlon, because it keeps me active. I know one day I'm going to be swimming, another day I'm going to be biking, another day I'm going to be running. And what's also really important is that you got a community with you. See, I was training by myself. I was training myself actually for a good 10 to 12 months, doing my own training programs, doing my own thing, and all swim, bike, run. But then you're like, I feel so lonely. You know, it's a lonely, lonely place to be in. You can have thoughts where you're like, oh, sometimes you're sad, sometimes you're angry, sometimes you're like, is this even worth it? Mm-hmm. But then you've got that little bit of a why that keeps you going. Now, what did I do when I was in that situation? I made sure I found myself a community of other athletes. And it's really, really important for you to surround yourself with people who are going through similar experiences with you, which is every triathlete, specifically Ironman athletes or middle distance triathletes or long distance triathletes, because they know what it comes with, the sacrifice that it comes with. And you try and build almost like a social life around that healthy lifestyle. So that's my personal sacrifice. But I do know a lot of athletes come from a really, really dark place, and it comes from pain. Mm-hmm. Based on traumatic experiences that they haven't quite, let's say, psychologically healed from it. And they've used sports as an escape, right? And using sports as an escape and them hanging on to it means that they've buried that emotion deep, deep inside of them that they can use, for example, in combat sports when they're in the ring, when you really need to use, like you said, your grit. Or when you really need to actually go ahead and do something, they can access that easily. But what they don't know is, from seeing the world of combat sports, is that a person who's lighthearted and let that go and is, you know, healed, makes a way better fighter than someone who's like really angry and takes that towards their advantage. Because that's the difference, I think, between Thais and, if we're talking about Muay Thai, that's the difference between Thais and maybe European or American fighters, the Western fighters, right? You've got Thais who are like very playful, but they're very skillful. One, because they've done it at such a young age. Mm-hmm. And we've got the Westerners who like really are trying, you can see that they're trying to go at it, but they're always outclassed by a Thai. Why? Because comfort, you know, like not being tense and using that, boom, going in every time, for them, for the Thais, is their advantage over someone who's tense all the time, because that being tense, taking all of that emotion, is going to gas yourself out really quick. It's all good having a good mindset, but your body needs to follow after it, you know? And I've seen a lot of athletes, even in sports of triathlon, where those athletes would get in a really dark place and have to bring all of that traumatic events in the past And then based on those traumatic events, they use that. But what they don't know is it might do you well up until the middle of the bike, and then you just decline from there. And then mentally it plays with you. And then it puts you in a bad state as well. Whereas you need to go in being like, all right, I've trained hard enough. I'm going to give 100%. And based on that 100%, I'm going to be like, whatever the outcome is, I'm going to try and make sure I get the top and try and give my all. If the outcome doesn't favor me, then I'm going to try again. But for someone who's dug into that traumatic experience or a dark place, like you said, it's more like, oh, I'm a failure, I can't do this. And you get that talk. Mm-hmm. And that might even affect the athlete in the certain sport. Because when you're in that stage, they're really hard to dig yourself out of. And you have to find different people. And that's why it's really important to surround yourself with those people who are going through similar experiences like you. It's always better to talk about it. Mm-hmm. When you're getting in that dark place, it's always better to surround yourself with like-minded people. And that's what I think every athlete should have, even professional athletes. Yes, they do train by themselves all the time, but they make sure that maybe at least once a week or once every 2 weeks, they surround themselves with people who mm-hmm. train with them. And that for them is a good enough reason to be like, all right, it might be a really hard day right now, but I can't wait for that day where I get to see my friends and make the best out of it. So, yeah.
I think, thanks for sharing that. That's so informative. A lot of these professional athletes, they also have sports psychologists who are kind of looking and monitoring, and they have different various protocols and exercises to tap deep into those darker states.
Yeah.
I like what you said about loneliness, because I think about 2 years ago, Harvard released a study. This is the longest study being done on anti-aging and stuff like that. I think it goes about 70 years. And what they found was loneliness is one of the biggest predictors of someone dying at an early age. So loneliness is worse than smoking cigarettes for your mortality and how fast you're going to die. And the other thing that I love, what you said, is the community part. Now, you know, as human beings, as animals, we are meant to be a part of a tribe or a community, and that's how we flourish.
Yeah.
You take even our cells, if you take them out in a petri dish and you leave them alone, that cell doesn't survive that long, but you add in a few more cells just by that cell knowing that there are similar things or similar like life forms around me, that's going to flourish.
Sure.
We look at the blue zones, which is the geographical populations all around the world where people have lived above 100, above 110, centenarians, super centenarians. And one of the most common traits that they have is that all of them are living in a community style where families are living together or close by. And even at like 90 or 100, they have people around them.
That's true.
And they celebrate that.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of people who are listening to this, and I think a lot of people who are always saying that, hey, I'm going to do this all myself and, you know, I can do it. And maybe they're highly confident. But as Marwan said, it's really important for you to know that you could do it yourself, but you could do it better when you have people around you.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Yeah.
What do you think needs to change in this world in terms of movement and health? Is it the education system? Is it positive influence on people? Like, let's talk about UAE. And we are very lucky in UAE and Dubai because we have Dubai Fitness Challenge, and the city is centered more than any other city, I would say, towards movement and yoga and all different forms of triathlon in Abu Dhabi and, you know, martial arts. There's so many things happening. But when you look at probably the world, what do you think needs to happen more?
So for the world, I think movement needs to be encouraged a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I think based on the food industry and us as humans, we need food to eat. And the food industry nowadays, like, it is really, really hard to find food that is not processed, it doesn't have some E numbers in it or something that could cause a side effect for that human being, right? You know, they say like 80% nutrition, 20% your workout. It's super true, because and then you got the market that's like, right, we're going to be doing organic, but even with the organic stuff, it's more expensive. So then you're like, oh, what am I going to pay like that much amount of money for food if I can just get it at this price?
Mm-hmm.
So I think movement is super important because we're putting food in us the whole time, and you don't know what comes into the food that you're eating, actually. So if you're not moving and you're just eating those food that probably has got either E numbers or, you know, like chicken from a three-legged chicken, nothing good can happen out of that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're feeding them steroids for them to grow quicker and anything like that. It can't be good for you. Mm-hmm. So you have to have that little bit of a balance, right? Mm-hmm. And that balance is movement. Now, regarding the UAE, with all of the sheikhs around here, they're doing a fantastic job, you know, motivating basically athletes to making sure that, you know, you've got the Dubai Fitness Challenge, you've got Dubai Active Show happening in Dubai, you've got different sponsors. Every time there is something, and it's keeping us busy as well. I've seen a huge growth as well in the past, let's say, I think 5 to 6 years in the fitness industry around here in the UAE is growing. It's growing, and it's growing really quick because you've got people from the outside and it's coming in, right? And sharing their knowledge and their experience for us to flourish as well as people or even locals around here to understand. I think in UAE, what is missing is education. I think knowledge plays a really, really important part.
That's why we have you here on the podcast.
I'm hoping to make a difference, and that's what it is. Like I'm super grateful for this podcast, and I think you're doing a fantastic job giving that awareness and telling everybody what are the myths and what is the real talk and what you should be doing. You're literally giving them answers on a golden platter, doing it that way. I think with the education, that it needs to slowly shift off from being a money making industry in the fitness industry, where it needs to slowly switch into, instead of getting your PT certificate in like 2-3 days, you know what I'm trying to say? Which plays a huge part into someone being like, yep, I got the certificate, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Let's squat 60 kilos as a warm up. Mm-hmm. Well, hang on a minute, where'd you get that from? It needs to change from that money-making machine into actual like education programs, workshops, where it's not just all about PT certifications. No, you need to go out there, bring out like guests from abroad, study. For example, have bachelor's degree around here for sports science in different universities, which we lack of as well. Needs to be more awareness, more workshops that's happening around here where you get recognized for it. So you get that maybe recognition that you've done this and this and this, you've done this and this and that. And that's the difference between, I think, in Europe. In Europe, like, for example, London, which is, I think it's ahead of its fitness industry. Everybody's doing really well. Everybody knows what they're talking about. They've got different universities that's got bachelor's degree program in sports science or whatever sports it may be. That's over here. I think that's what needs to change a little bit. I'm hoping you and I can make a difference, hopefully. Even if it's that one person like we was talking about. Yeah, I think that's what's lacking over here.
Amazing. Marwan, I can talk to you all day long, and you know, we've not spoken about recovery, and there are so many things. Probably we'll have a chat later about this, but we're coming to an end to the podcast. And my final question to you is that if you had a time machine and you could go back in time and give yourself a piece of advice or maybe two, what would that be?
Oof, that is a very deep question, isn't it? Trust the process. I'd say trust the process and keep going. Don't ever give up on anything. Just keep focused and keep on that certain mindset.
Perfect. If people want to get in touch with you, say hi, or you know, ask about, maybe there are a lot of people who are doing triathlons that are listening to this. They want to ask you a question or you know, get in touch with you. What's the best way to get in touch with you?
They can find me on Instagram, at Marwan Obenna, or they can even join in any of my community sessions I'm going to be doing going forward. They can even join in. I'm going to be throwing some workshops and education programs as well in the future, hopefully. Bring in special guests as well in VIO, which is an up-and-coming gym by MR that's going to be open up. And yeah, just got plenty of resources. Just hit me up wherever you find, if you find me out there, just tell me and I'm...
Yeah, go say hi.
Yeah, just come say hi, please. Don't be shy.
Amazing. Marwan, thank you so much for doing what you do. You are a inspiring person in many people's lives. You are a huge motivator.
Oh, thank you.
I love that you are spreading your own life as an example, not just talking about things, but you're showing people how it can be done. And you come into this podcast when you're injured, you tearing your LCL, MCL, all of these things, and still going on is very inspiring.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Same here. And this is your host, CJ, signing out of the Shift for CJ podcast. Everyone have a great day, great week, great month, great life. And remember, it's not the final destination or the final target that you should be looking at all the time. Because if you have one eye on the target and one eye on the way, you only have one eye. Remember, trust the process. Don't go for the final outcome. Just go and enjoy yourself. Have a good time. The process will take care of itself. And that's the show today. Thank you.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.